Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about news and technology articles from June 2018, New Scientist. I am reading this just to produce rapid podcasts for prototyping in my podcast automation engine. So I've got music at the start. I'm just rearranging it so you can press a button and listen to a podcast, then authorize it, and then it's just published. So there we go. So it just requires arranging a few things. My son's on the computer doing his homework at the moment, so he's kicked me off. So let's read a few of these here. And I'm also aiming to actually increase, sort of as I listen to an hour, so I can listen to my voice and the actual production of the podcast is taken away. I can actually listen a bit to the way that I speak, and I'm going to try and increase the interest, pace and rhythm of how I speak. The Higgs works, but still baffles. So the famous Higgs particles are discovered at CERN. We were expecting it, but it has only deepened the enigma. Experiments from the Large Hadron Collider at CERN near Geneva, Switzerland, found that the Higgs boson really does give all the other fundamental particles mass. New measurements by the ATLAS and CMS collaborations have seen the Higgs, discovered at CERN in 2012, being produced along with both top quark and its antimatter equivalent, a top antiquark. It follows the discovery of both groups of Higgs by both groups of Higgs boson decaying directly into tau leptons, heavier cousins of the electrons. Both measurements are based on 5 years of data. Interaction between the Higgs and the top quarks are particularly key, as the top is the most massive fundamental particle. At 172 GeV electron volts, it dwarfs even Higgs' own mass at 125 GeV. So whatever the Higgs does, it does it more with the top. It drives why the universe is like it is, says Fabio Cerri of ATLAS, but it's really puzzling. We don't understand why the top is so heavy. The results it suggests interaction between the Higgs and the top quark is just as predicted by the Standard Model, our best description of how particles and forces interact. The tau lepton... the tau lepton results are in similar... Okay, the leptons and quarks are different. Together, they are the first direct indication that interactions with the Higgs boson explain why fermions, a class of particles that make up matter, have masses that they do. Understanding the Higgs mechanism could help us explain the stability and structure of matter around us. Subtle differences in masses of up and down quarks explain why neutrons within the atomic nucleus are heavier than protons, and so why stable atoms can form. Similarly, the mass of the electron sets the size of atoms, and so determines how chemistry works. Whoa, that is... Oh, well, that's definitely true in quantum physics. Okay. The top quark measures measurements are another bittersweet triumph for the Standard Model, says John Butterworth of the ATLAS team. It's one of the benchmark processes we knew we had to see as part of the health check of the Standard Model. And that health is disgustingly good. Disgustingly, because we know the Standard Model is incomplete. It leaves open essential questions on the makeup of dark matter, which is more than two-thirds of all matter, and why matter apparently dominates antimatter in the universe. Every time we see something that agrees with the Standard Model, that means we don't know the answers, he says. Any deviation will be a clue, and we want clues. Next article, Parkinson link to virus that kills good bacteria. A virus that kills good form of gut bacteria could trigger Parkinson's disease. A viral attack may cause a chain reaction of nerve damage leading to from the digestive system to the brain. Parkinson's disease is a progressive disorder causing tremors and trouble moving. It's known to involve the death of nerve cells in the brain, linked with its misfolding of a protein found in nerve fibers called synuclein. Okay, that's interesting. Although Parkinson's is seen as a brain disorder, a recent suggestion is that it's the misfolding that starts the nerve in the gut, triggering a domino effect up the nerve fibers to the brain. It's unclear what starts the change of synuclein. George Tetz of the Human Microbiology Institute in New York thinks the gut microbes might be responsible. After analysing existing data from the gut microbes of 31 people with Parkinson's disease and 28 people without the condition, his team found that the biggest difference were the abundance of dairy bacteria such as Lactococcus species and the virus that they prey on them. The viruses, called bacteriophages, invade bacteria, produce inside them and then burst out, killing them. People with Parkinson's disease are twice the levels of viruses that, and just one-tenth the level of lactobacillus. More likely than not, this is more likely than not a coincidence, says Tetz. The difference could not have been caused by Parkinson's medication because the patients had all been recently diagnosed and have yet to start the treatment. But the finding isn't clear-cut. For example, last year another group analysed the same microbiome data using a different technique. They found difference in other species and not lactococcals. And it's unclear whether the microbial changes cause the nerve damage that leads to Parkinson's or are a consequence of it. The findings were presented at the ASM Microbe Conference in Atlanta last week. Keep you on top of it. Okay, microbes give away criminals. The sneakiest burglars slip unnoticed, but they still leave millions of witnesses at every crime scene. Researchers have found a way to identify criminals based on the microbes they shed from the skin and nostrils. Jared Hampton Marcel at Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois and his colleagues showed in 2014 that people leave a unique microbial signature in their homes. This implied microbes could also be used to identify suspect criminals like burglars. If we could potentially find signatures that are unique to each individual, says Hampton Marcel. He first visited the crime scene investigations in Florida. They explained how burglars generally enter the homes and told him that the local law enforcement's responses vary from minutes to hours. In 2016-2017, Hampton Marcel and his colleagues arranged for 45 undergraduates to carry out mock burglaries at 10 homes in Illinois and Florida. The researchers then swabbed the microbe deposits. Points of entry were very fruitful. They're going to be using force, moving, likely shedding their microbiome, says Hampton Marcel. Finally, the team analysed microbes from the from the skin and nostrils of every burglar using a genetic marker to distinguish the various strains. After sampling the participants and gathering data from other studies, the researchers found they could group together thousands of unique sets of microbes that served as the microbial fingerprints for the individual people. Ultimately, they could identify which mock burglar had entered each property with greater than 70% accuracy. I flipped out, says Hamilton Marcel. It literally fell out of my chair. The research presented at the ASM Microbe Conference in Atlanta, Georgia last week. Okay, this one reporter's been there. Okay. It's an exciting step forward, says forensic scientist Claire Gunnett of Sheffield University, UK. Like other forms of trace evidence, such as DNA, microbial data could help show us that burglar has rummaged around a specific item, like a jewellery box, she says. However, there are obstacles to using the technique in criminal investigations. During the 2014 study, the occupants of one home left it empty for a few days. In that time, their microbial signature vanished. So unlike fingerprints, warned Hamilton Marcel, the microbial signature is left by a criminal will decay, starting in just 30 minutes after they leave. But if samples can be collected fast enough, the decay may also reveal when the crime happened, says Ruth Morgan of the University of College. Is there some way of determining the age of the deposit? That's potentially a really valuable way of reconstructing events around a crime. Hamilton Marcel wants to get the accuracy of differentiation up to at least 90%. That would help, says Morgan, but she says that even 70% accuracy could be useful if DNA fingerprints evidence were also available. I can see how this, in combination with other forms of evidence pertinent to a specific case, could be an incredibly useful toolkit. AI works out the fastest way to put up buildings. You've heard of groundbreaking algorithms, but what about algorithms breaking ground? An AI system that can plan the construction of buildings is being piloted on several projects in the US in the hope that it will speed up work. The system, called Artificial Intelligence Construction Engineering, or ALICE, can digest a 3D model of a proposed building and split out a detailed schedule on how it should be constructed. This includes specifying in what order particular structures need to be fitted together, such as a ceiling to walls, or specialist tools, such as cranes, need to be on site. Around 20 US companies, as well as a major US property group in Thailand, are now trialing ALICE. It's a breakthrough in our minds, says Ricardo Can at Mortenson, a large US construction firm currently testing ALICE on three multi-million projects in Chicago and Seattle. In a pilot last year, the firm used the technology to plan and develop a schedule for a hospital in Denver, Colorado. As the building had already started, it only partly implemented the proposed plan. But doing so, it helped to cut the construction time by a couple of weeks, says Cam. The system also works by coming up with hundreds of millions of potential ways to assemble a building. These are generated as l in as little as a day. ALICE then chooses a tiny handful of those schedules that could work based on certain parameters, such as how many cranes are available at the particular locations or the project's cost limitations. Firms using ALICE have to feed it recipes on how they typically construct certain things, from walls to columns. But once this is done, the system automatically works out how those components slot together. A bit like puzzle pieces, says René Mocco, CEO of ALICE Technologies, a California firm behind the AI. Drones to spot festival violence by Abigail Bial. A drone surveillance system can identify when someone in a crowd is acting violently. The artificial intelligence-based technology will be tested at a science festival in India later this year. The system assesses the way each person in the crowd is moving via two cameras on the drone. At the moment, it can recognize punching, stabbing, shooting, kicking, and strangling. However, once the technology goes on sale, whoever buys it will be able to input their own definition of a violent act, says Amarjot Singh of the University of Cambridge, who built the system with two colleagues based on the Science Institute in India. To teach the software what the violent act looks like, the user moves computer-generated stick people on a screen to mimic the different actions they want the drone to recognize. In initial tests, the system was 94% accurate at identifying real violence from footage. However, the more people appear in the frame, the less accurate, less falling to 79% accuracy when looking at 10 people at once. The system will be tested in October in Tenzon, a science and technology festival at the National Institute of Technology in Wangal, India. The festival is attended by 3,000 to 4,000 people and is extremely packed, says Singh. However, there are concerns about both the test and the technology. Why is this being trialled at a college festival in India rather than Glastonbury or Cochlear, says Malvika Ijum, a cyber law researcher at Harvard University and a fellow of the Center of the Universe at the Center for Internet and Society in India. She suggests it may be because it's legally and socially easier to get approval. Violence can't be described as such as a basic set of motions, he says. Therefore, technology like this is likely to be accurately catch is unlikely to catch all violent acts. What constitutes a violent act can be defined by a system's owner. There's also the threat of misuse. What if the tech used by non-democratic regimes to identify dissidents, or by gangs to identify enemies, says Gemma Galvin, who works on the ethics of technology at the University of Barcelona in Spain. How do they get these people? This system is an example of an imperfect science attempting to enact a fantasy of a perfect society, says Jarrison. Even if the accuracy rates were higher, this kind of society higher is the kind of society we want to build? Singh certainly thinks so. AI can help develop powerful surveillance systems which assist identify technology pernicious individuals which will make society a safer place. Most four-year-olds, this is I think by the same author, I suppose, most four-year-olds prefer shoes to sick people. Do you care more about beetles or people who are ill? Your answer probably depends on your age, since your moral compass gradually shifts from early childhood to adult. As we get older, we increasingly value other human beings over plants, animals, and inanimate objects. According to research at Carrie Nenda University of Queensland, Australia, the team showed 24 pictures to 151 children aged between 4 and 10, asking them to place the people and things they cared about most in the inner circle, those they cared about little in the middle circle, and those they didn't care about at all in the outer circles. All age groups placed pictures of their mum and their best friends in the inner circle, but there were differences in how the younger and older children rated other humans. For example, four-year-olds tended to care less about teachers and police officers than they did about dogs, monkeys, and rose bushes. They showed even less interest in sick people, rating them lower than beetles, plates, and shoes. In contrast, 10-year-olds tended to care more about a range of humans. So I'm getting bitten by a mosquito here. Particularly those who are ill or who have disabilities. This is more in line with the moral values of adults, which has been tested in previous studies. As we get older, our awareness of distinctions between humans and other animals grows, says Nella. Children may care less about sick people because they haven't yet grasped the concept of pain, says Nella. Over time, our experience of sickness and pain helps build empathy with others, she says. We're driven to help and care sick people because we recognise that we ourselves would want the same treatment. Another finding was that children of all ages paid less importance on people from different racial backgrounds. For example, Caucasian children typically place Chinese people in the outer circles. Nilda says the study helps to identify prejudices that might be possible to tackle with education. Oh God. The team now plans to see children's moral values vary across cultures. It's likely that every culture upbringing will have its own unique influence on our preferences and what we care about. Okay. Last page. Seals hold a clue to REM, rapid eye movement sleep, by Sam Wong. One species of seal sleeps in a way never seen before. Oh, sorry, so I'm stopping this as I'm getting eaten alive by mosquitoes out here. One species of seal sleeps in a way never seen in any other animal. The odd habit may help explain REM, rapid eye movement sleep, the form of slumber when we have our most vivid dreams. REM sleep is so named because humans move their eyes back and forth during it, under the shut eyelids, i.e. you've got two electrodes on either side of your eyes. This phase of sleep seems to be essential for health of most mammals. For example, if rats are deprived of it, they lose weight and eventually die. Cetacean, like dolphins, are an exception. Other REM sleeps at a time so they can remain vigilant. Studies have found no sign of REM sleep in cetaceans, this is dolphins. Seeing more exceptions, Jerome Siegel at the University of California, Los Angeles, and his colleague looked at the northern fur seal. They are semi-aquatic, living mostly in the sea, except during the breeding season. The team gave four captive seals implants and recorded their brain activity, allowing them to track the sleep rates. The seal had access to a dry platform, but the team removed it for 10 to 14 days at a stretch to simulate time at sea. On land, the addition to slow-wave non-REM sleep, the seals had 80 minutes of REM sleep a day. In the water, however, the REM sleep fell to just 3 minutes a day on average. Unlike any animal studied, the fur seals sometimes slept with their whole brain and sometimes with just half, like dolphins. The proportion of half-brain sleep varied from 62% on land to 94% in water, possibly to watch out for predators like orcas. After being deprived of REM sleep, most mammals get extra sleep catch-up, but the fur seals showed little or no rebound on back on land. It showed no apparent ill effect from going without REM sleep. The popular explanation for REM sleep is that it is involved in long-term memory storage. Well, that's not true. But Siegel says there's lots of evidence against this. Some antidepressant drugs suppress REM sleep with no apparent impact on memory. I think most people know that. Reviewing the data on how mammals sleep, the researchers found that time sleep spent in REM sleep correlates with the amount of non-REM sleep. But in species that don't sleep with their whole brain, REM sleep is absent. To explain this, they propose that REM sleep helps regulate the brain temperature. And that is true, well, it's hard to say. When you're in REM sleep, you are temporarily a cold-blooded animal. There you go, you lose temperature control completely. I've just read a book on sleep, so that's interesting. When the entire brain is in non-REM sleep, it cools. So the REM may be needed to warm it back up, preparing the animal for waking. Previous studies have found that animals, including humans, are more alert when woken after REM sleep than after non-REM sleep. Thomas Weir and the National Institute of Mental Health in Maryland puts this idea forward in 1992. The article adds to the story, says Weir, animals that are perfectly capable of producing REM sleep dispense with it for long as some part of their brain is kept warm by the waking state. Okay, the brain warming may be relevant, but probably isn't the whole story, says John Lescue of La Trobe University in Melbourne. If the function of REM sleep were only to modestly increase the brain temperature, then one wonders why we could not just wake up from deep sleep, he says. It might suggest that REM sleep serves some other functions unrelated to brain warming. Well, there you go. Why not just actually measure the temperature of your brain? I don't understand. I think they have. That's interesting. So when you sleep, when you go in REM sleep, you lose your temperature control of your body. You become cold-blooded, according to this book I've read. Mars has organic material that may be from ancient life. Mars is full of organic molecules that life needs to thrive. NASA's Curiosity rover has found methane seeping up from the ground in summer, and more complex organic molecules preserved the Martian clay for 3.5 billion years. Most carbon-containing molecules are classed as organic. Some have turned up on Mars before, but none as sophisticated as those newly found in the clay of a dried lake bed. These are complex organic molecules that we think were floating around the lake in the Mars 3 billion years ago, and that we can pick up with our and examine today, says Chris Sternbeck of Rice University in Texas. The molecules that could have arrived on meteorites or volcanic processes could not have formed. There's also a chance they may come from living organisms. Even if they didn't, they could have been food for some microbes in the Mars. The molecules have lasted so long that any such microbes, if they existed, could be similarly preserved. Curiosity also examined methane in the red planet's atmosphere. Chris Webster of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, has his team found a seasonal cycle with more methane in the Martian skies during each hemisphere's summer. This model is best fitted, fits the fluctuation. The methane starts deep in the ground and wends its way up to the surface through pores in the fissures. Got underground. How it got underground is still a mystery. It's possible that the methane is linked with other organic compounds. You might have this organic material at depth going through various processes and forming methane, which vents to the surface. This is Jennifer Edgebroad at the NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. There are organisms that are doing... Are there organisms doing these processes? Is there life? There is a laundry list of non-biological processes that could produce organic molecules on Mars. But life isn't off the table yet.